As you're probably aware, in your own course later, you're going to be reading a work of fiction called Siddhartha by Hermann Hesse, which is on themes and the view of life in the universe that's found in the original Veda, or the literature from ancient India. That literature was compiled in Sanskrit language about 3000 BC, which makes it older than the Greek also. And it includes many, many different works that have been read throughout the ages. Here we have a copy of the Bhagavad Gita, which is the most popular of all the Vedas. This is actually one chapter of a long work called the Mahabharata. There's so much Vedic literature, and in the last couple of hundred years it's been translated. And you may have heard also of the Upanishads or the Vedanta Sutra. These are some of the more popular works in the Vedic tradition. Not that it's something isolated in the East or for Hindus, but all thinkers in the West, especially in the last 200 years since the books have been available, have been influenced. This particular edition, the Bhagavad Gita, published in America, has a couple of quotes on the back by very esteemed Americans like Henry David Thoreau and Ralph Waldo Emerson. Just to give you an idea how Americans have also studied the Veda, Thoreau wrote in his book Walden about this particular Vedic work, the Bhagavad Gita. "In the morning, I bathe my intellect in the stupendous and cosmogonal philosophy of the Bhagavad Gita, in comparison with which our modern world and its literature seem puny and trivial." And Emerson wrote, I believe in his journals, "Yes, I owed a magnificent day to the Bhagavad Gita. It was the first of books. It was as if an empire spoke to us, nothing small or unworthy, but large, serene, consistent, the voice of an old intelligence, which in another age and climate had pondered and thus disposed of the same questions which exercise us." So I won't make so much reference to this Siddhartha, except that the themes that are covered there include source. Then when you study this book later, you'll have a more depth of understanding. So one thing that is discussed there is the nature of reality and the nature of illusion. In the Vedas, the illusion is described by the word maya. And there are different words to describe the truth, but this word is very good. Sat, that which is true. Sat also means eternal. Which gives you an idea of what, according to the Veda, is true. So this is discussed in a very personal way in the Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna speaks to his disciple Arjuna. As far as this Krishna name, Krishna is the most important person in all the Vedic literature. He's sometimes addressed as Vishnu. And Krishna is in the Upanishads and in the Vedanta. He's the goal of the Vedic literature. Krishna is actually a descriptive name for God. Just as the Vedic literature, in other words, while it may be studied academically as mythology, is presented on the level of scripture, just as you study the nature of God and reality in the Bible, And understand God as Jehovah or Allah, according to the Quran, so that Krishna means the Supreme Being in the theology of the Vedas, that person who is controlling everything. And it is discussed in a very scientific way in terms of transcendental philosophy. So the first thing that Krishna teaches is regards the nature of the self and the world. And when he teaches Arjuna, his disciple, on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, that's the historical, dramatic setting of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna is very troubled by his duties in having to fight in this war. Although he's always been a fighter, he's a warrior. But these circumstances in the Bhagavad Gita involving his fighting family members and other complications make him forget his actual duty. So it's a specific problem, but also Arjuna is supposed to stand for every person and every one of us on a little battlefield, sometimes a big battlefield, but regularly are facing some crisis that we don't know the answer to. Although we're very educated in terms of modern world, or we may have recourse to persons who we like to take their advice. All these things will fail on certain critical occasions, and you won't know what to do exactly. What is your best interest, or what are you supposed to do? When all intelligence fails, then a person becomes very much lost. So Krishna analyzes in speaking to Arjuna that although you have your specific problem with your relatives, the root of your problem is that you don't know who you are, and rather you've, in illusion, you've taken yourself and to be this material body. Therefore, you are feeling so bereft. Therefore, Krishna teaches that the real self is different than the body. This is the beginning of transcendental knowledge. The word used for self is Atma. A number of these words you'll see even in the Siddhartha. Atma. So Atma is not this body. The body may be female, it may be male, but that's not me, that's not the Atma. Just as we even say, my hand or my foot, when we think of our body, we say my, meaning that the person who is the owner of the body, or the actual person who is within the body, is different, or the conscious person is not actually any part of the body. We even say my body, the whole body, is not me. Therefore, if my body happens to be white or black or female or male, that is a material fact, but it is different than what myself is. This is very important, because without self-knowledge, how will we even be motivated to become? We won't know what is our happiness or what is our best activity. If we think the activity is that which will just be the best for this body, that is the goal of human life. So these things are considered. Therefore, Maya means to take the self as the body, or to take the material world as the permanent home. Krishna doesn't teach, sometimes his teaching is misunderstood, that Krishna is saying everything, that their spirit is real. What spirit is, we'll discuss. But that spirit is real, but that everything material is false is the doctrine of illusion. But it's not that everything is false that we see, but that what is false is the concept of thinking that it is, that the body is the real self, or that, say, America is my actual home, or that this material world is my permanent place. That this is illusion, we can see, that you're a little, just by being a little thoughtful. Who can say that this world, although we identify with it as our home, is actually a permanent place? Anyone who thinks like that, he thinks that, yes, I am going to make my abode here, make my home here, and I shall stay here. That's not possible. Or if he thinks that I will stay permanently in my present identity. We think like this only by not thinking. In fact, in the Vedas, one sage was asked that you are supposed to be very experienced in human nature and experience and philosophy. So what is the most wonderful thing that you've ever encountered? And the sage replied, the most wonderful thing is that everyone is in a very special illusion. And that is that although each person experiences that all his predecessors and his family have died, and he sees around him everyone is dying. Sometimes within the lifetime the grandfather dies, the father dies. But somehow each person thinks that he won't die, that his situation is permanent. Of course, if we're confronted with it logically or factually, no one can make a case for that he will remain here permanently. But according to this sage, he said, actually one is thinking like this, that although everyone has died, my situation is different. I am not faced with the prospect, with that same prospect. So this is a great illusion, which is not even something that requires a metaphysical assumption to accept. But it's an illusion if you think that this temporary world is the permanent abode or the permanent identity as the self. Therefore, if this is taken seriously, this fact, then one has to consider what is real and what is illusion. What is permanent and what is impermanent. Therefore, illusion really means something that's not going to stay. Just like you say, there may be some happiness in material life, and so we say happiness is not an illusion. But Krishna teaches that happiness which comes and goes is an illusion, because for a thing to be true should mean that this is the reality, or that it is a permanent thing. In other words, the happiness of this material world is a flickering thing. These are just different ideas given out with not too much order. But as far as the order in which Krishna teaches these things, actually nothing can be understood unless one gets past the ABC of Vedic knowledge, to understand the person different than the body. And in order to make this clear, Krishna gives an example to illustrate that when the body dies, this temporary machinery in which the Atma is living, the self actually takes another body, continues to exist. Therefore, I should be aware of this, that there will be another life, another body in which I will take up activities again. And my present actions should be formed with that in mind. Not living just for the illusion of my present family members, my present material situation. But understanding that these things will, as they've come, they will go. And I should invest in this future situation. Because the nature of the material world is always one of miserable condition. That is, again, there's happiness, but the happiness is always being upset by, for one thing, the impermanent situation. I meet a very nice girl who becomes my wife, but then when the love is broken by quarrel, divorce, or death, then it becomes unhappy. Or I make nice plans for a career and the career is being established, but then everything is taken away at death. Or then disease comes. I'm very happy to enjoy the senses in this material body, but when disease comes or old age comes, then the happiness is upset. And finally, everything is annihilated. But after the annihilation of this body, then another life is there, another chapter is there. So, because this is a little strange, especially to us in the West, maybe very strange, Krishna gives an example, which is something that we all experience. And he says, as in this life, the embodied soul, or the Atma, living within the body, experiences boyhood, youth, and old age, so at the time of death, the soul takes another body. So this is the change, or the transmigration of the soul, as experienced in each person's own lifetime. That is, when we were born, we had a body like this, an infant's body. Now, that body is no longer with us. We took the body of young boy or young girl, and now our youth has come. Now we'll have to take a body of old age. Actually, these are changes of body. But we can understand that I am still there, the I am. Although it was completely different, my activities were different, and my consciousness was actually different. But I was there as a little boy or a little girl. And I am here now, and when I take the old body, it will be a very different, but the sense of my identity is still there. Therefore, Krishna says, why do you think, or that his that verse in which he says this, it ends, the self-realized soul is not bewildered by such a change. As we're not so bewildered by the fact that we've changed bodies in this lifetime, one who is realized, he's not bewildered that after death, there's another change. So one who doesn't culture this knowledge of the self in this life and just engages himself in temporary activity is considered to be under the influence of Maya. One might ask that, well, if this self is survives the death of the body and is therefore eternal, if the self is spiritual and not material, then what is it doing in connection with this unreal? Why is it in an unreal? Why are we thinking that this material world is all in all? It certainly seems to be all in all. It certainly seems to be very real. So if we're actually spiritual, why aren't we experiencing that state of eternality? The soul's quality are described as eternal, also full of bliss, not interrupted by the miseries that are due to the body, which we already described, how one is happy but it's disturbed. So he's free of that duality. That means he's happy, eternal, and he's also full of knowledge. But why don't I experience that now? The answer is that this Maya, or material energy, is actually influencing the soul. The soul is tiny, although spiritual. It is a small particle of spirit and is being influenced by this material nature. Therefore, human life is meant to get that education, which, or self-realization, which will let me see things as they are. See what is this material world and see what I am. Those are two parts of knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita. And the third is to know what is the Supreme Being, or what is God. The interrelation of these three things is knowledge. Right, Krishna. To know what a person should know, what is Krishna or God? As we're individual spirits, we're still, even spiritually speaking, we're not the all in all. Even if by culture of knowledge, meditation, or some purifying process, you could understand that I have a higher consciousness. My nature is not just this body and the bodily activities that go on for 50 to 100 years and then everything is finished, but I actually exist as a higher consciousness or spiritual consciousness. Even if you come to realize this, It's not that this makes you the all-pervading truth, that therefore you are the supreme creator. As we said, our spiritual nature is to be tiny or a part of the supreme, which is God. That we can never become. So that supreme consciousness is described as Krishna. Then we have to know what is the self, the individual self, and we have to know what is nature or the material world. I may have bitten off more than I can chew for a small amount of time, but I'll just introduce a few more basic things and hope that then we can clear up things that I haven't said clearly or things that you're more interested in hearing from me in the balance of the time. But these three things, at least, are the real subject matter for a human being to inquire into during his a human form of life. And if he does it successfully, it's not just idle philosophy that then he becomes learned or becomes famous for knowing what is the absolute truth. But if a person actually finds the end of knowledge, then the success is that at the time of death, he doesn't have to come back into another material situation. This taking another body is perpetually going on, according to Vedic knowledge. And it's based on, I'll give you a Sanskrit word which is very popular in English, although not always understood, karma. According to a person's karma, he has to take another material body. Karma means the result that we get for our activities. Very simple thing to understand. It's a law of nature that if you act pious result, if you act impiously, there's an impious result. There's always some result to the activity. And taken in terms of the next life that we get a body suitable to our mentality and our material desire, although it's awarded not on our whim, but by the higher authority of nature. And even if you've been very, very pious, you say a good person, you will still get another material body. It may be a pious one, which would be to be born in, say, a rich family or a cultured family, at least to be born in the human form of life, because transmigration of the soul also means that if one misuses the human form of life, he can take birth in a lower consciousness. This is the responsibility of a lifetime. If it's just entirely misspent under the illusion of Maya, then never mind these subject matter. Let me just enjoy. Beg, borrow, and steal, but just get the objects of enjoyment, because at the time of death, everything is finished. If one thinks like that, he can even get a lower form of life. But our point is that karma, good or bad, makes you come back to another life. And coming back, even as the most sophisticated or materially well-off human being, you'll still have to suffer old age, disease, and all the shocks of material life. Therefore, the purpose of culturing sat, truth, is that one develops his relationship, the relationship of the self to the supreme, which is an eternal relationship now covered by the effect of Maya. And when this is known to us, then we no longer have anything to do with this material world, and we go to the spiritual world, where we can, without any interruption, enjoy life of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. And these are some of the basic philosophical teachings of Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, and we may say that they're the person, or as Aldous Huxley called this philosophy, the perennial philosophy. Man is always wondering, who am I? Where have I come from? What's going to happen after death? And if a so-called man doesn't bother with these things, then the Veda very explicitly says that he is not a human being. So it's not exactly an Eastern idea, but it is a universal idea. And the Bhagavad Gita's answers, approaches, are worth consideration by every person who reflects. So I'll leave it at that in hopes that there are some questions, and we can go on from there. Questions. Yeah.
What is the nature that you speak of?
Well, by this I meant the material world. Material world. With all its pleasures and pains, as experienced on different planets and different species of life, material world. So in terms of this relation, a person is supposed to understand that actually he's different than this. As I said in the beginning, I think I am matter. I think because this body was born in this land, that's what I am. I'm American. It's just actually a designation by names. But we think that I am matter. Myself is not spirit, but myself is, well, what is the body made out of? It's made out of different materials, like the way the Vedas categorize it. Earth, water, fire, air, or in terms of chemical composition. This body is made of skin and bone and blood. So we say that that is the self, and that I am this matter. But higher knowledge means that actually this is like saying that the car you're driving in is you, but actually I'm the person within the body. Some big profound question. I may have not just explained things clearly. Is there anything that you're thinking?
I was reading the introduction to your edition of the Bhagavad Gita before I came to class.
Yes.
And I came across a statement which I'd like you to clarify for me. That, as I understood it, nature, the material world, was indeed also created by divinity,
yes.
But it is energy separated from the energy of divinity. Is this correct?
Yeah. Because therefore it is not false. Just like the Buddhist philosophy says that this material, and there's also a school of Indian thought, impersonal, in which they say that this universe, and as well as the universe, the individual self, is false, means it has no basis at all in reality or existence. That you think it exists is just your hallucination. It's like we see water in the desert, it's not really there. But that philosophy is, from Vedic viewpoint, a nihilistic, a negative view of the absolute truth. That they see, that by the Buddhist viewpoint, one can see that actually this material world is not real. It is with bitter experience because it is temporary. There must be some truth more than this. And so the Buddha arrived at the concept of nirvana, or a state of non-existence or nothingness, which is relief from the pains of the material world. But it doesn't explain where this material world come from. It may be an illusion, as they say, but practically speaking, we have to understand where this universe has come from, and deal with it in some manner. So the explanation in the Bhagavad Gita is that you cannot say that this creation is simply a false thing, because it's also a creation of the Supreme Being. It is His material energy, or sometimes called inferior or separated energy, but it's also the creation of God. So this is like an agnostic or atheistic version, in essence, to say that everything is ultimately false. But the illusion is, if you think that this is, yes, this is my place, this